Africa Live on the WhoRadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and today we're going to be discussing the situation in Zimbabwe. You know, for those of you who watch the media and read the media, imperialist media, you see and hear a lot about Zimbabwe all the time. But we find it difficult to wade through, you know, the imperialist propaganda that attempts to define the situation there in its own interest. And so what we are attempting to do here is to cut through all of that and to get to what's really happening there in Zimbabwe and its implications for African people there and everywhere else around the world. Our intention is to bring a comrade, a youth organizer, a comrade, Kwanisai Mafa, on the line with us, who is there on the ground in Zimbabwe, and he is the president of ZIPAYA, which is the Zimbabwe Pan-African Youth Agenda. And he also is the founder and chair of the Ujamaa Youth Farming Project. And so our intention is to bring him on the line. We are having some difficulty bringing him on. And if you are listening, Comrade Mafa, please call us if you can. You can do so by calling at country code 001. 727-824-5707. Again, that's 001-727-824-5707. We do have, however, Comrade Chairman Omalia Shetela, our leader, in the studio with us today, who will, you know, can provide a real good overview of what we are looking at in Zimbabwe and what that means for us as African people everywhere else around the world. Uhuru, Chairman.
Uhuru, Africa.
I'm glad to have you here again today. The situation in Zimbabwe is an interesting one, and like I was saying before, we're getting hit all the time with propaganda from imperialist media, and there's also quite a bit of discussion among Africans that's going on about Zimbabwe. I know our party has had some relationship with the situation in Zimbabwe, for many years. Give some overview about, you know, what it is we're looking at there in Zimbabwe.
Well, first of all, I think it needs to be understood that when we look at how Western, which is really something that can be translated as white imperialism, is working to deepen the isolation of Zimbabwe, to deepen the immiseration of our people there in Zimbabwe, it is really not a new phenomenon. And I don't mean this in the broad and general context of how imperial white power attacked and has developed itself off Africa in those general terms. But I mean, when you look at how the struggle to liberate Zimbabwe has unfolded in modern history, we see that in the 1960s, in particular, the Soviet Union, which was then the highest expression of white leftism, had determined that there were only six legitimate revolutionary organizations in all of Africa, and that was characterized as the authentic six. And among the authentic six was, for example, the ANC in what they still refer to as South Africa, and it was ZAPU, the Zimbabwe African People's Union, in what was then characterized as Rhodesia. But the contending organizations, both in Rhodesia and South Africa, with which we had a relationship, were the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania and the Zimbabwe African National Union, or ZANU. And in fact, it was this ability of the Soviet Union to determine which of all the revolutionary organizations, or which of the organizations in Africa, were authentic and which were not. And then based on that determination, give support, give material resources, give ideological and organizational and political training, military training. It was the fact that that on the one hand, while you had the white imperial world holding up the regimes of the Rhodesian and the South African oppressive regimes, and then another international white force deciding which of the organizations were authentic, it seems. I mean, this was one of the things that informed us of the need for have an all-African, our own capacity to determine which of our organizations were authentic and which of them we would support, and find means by which we could collectivize our talents, our skills, our resources, and give support to those areas of Africa collectively that offered opportunities to deepen our revolution. And the African Socialist International that we have been working for many years, the effort to do this was informed in part by how Zimbabwe at that juncture was being isolated by the so-called international white left. So you're not just looking at a new phenomenon when you see the imperial white power working to isolate Zimbabwe. They isolated Zimbabwe then for the same reason they're working to isolate Zimbabwe now. Mm-hmm. And that is because ZANU, the Zimbabwe African National Union, was the organization that based its program on recapturing the land that belongs to African people and that had been forcibly extracted and alienated from the masses of our people. And ZANU also, at that juncture, offered up an all-African solution to the contradictions that African people were confronted with. And because of this, it did not meet the needs and the requirements of the white left, the international white left. And so you saw all of them giving their support to ZAPU, the Zimbabwe African People's Union, even though it was ZANU that was actually in the trenches and actually leading the armed struggle to emancipate our people. So there is history here, and within the context of the modern struggle for liberation. And as I said, what we see now in terms of isolating Zimbabwe and ZANU, because again, it is ZANU that's being attacked and isolated, even though the people are paying a terrible price for it, and it's being attacked now for the same reasons that it was being isolated in the 1960s, why the Soviet Union wouldn't have anything to do with it, and why most of the broad and general white left would not have anything to do with it. Our party, the African People's Socialist Party, actually built the first ZANU support committee in the United States and perhaps in North America. And we did a lot of work at the juncture when we met ZANU. We were unaware of Comrade Robert Mugabe's role in the organization, and the public face internationally for ZANU was a man whose name was Sistole. I think it might have been Inambininji Sistole, who was seen as the president of that organization. We trained many of the ZANU cadre who came to this country. When I say trained them, I mean in terms of how to make their case, take the struggle out to African people in this country to build the kind of support that was generally missing for ZANU within North America. We function as organizers, and in many ways we did the same thing with the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania, and it was almost in some instances as though we were the same organization. Our relationship was extremely close. There were, as with most liberation organizations, and particularly those with fewest resources, serious kinds of internal contradictions that would flare up from time to time within ZANU. that we were not privy to in terms of what was the basis of those contradictions. But I know from time to time there would be representatives of ZANU who we would tour throughout the U.S. to help raise monies and put out the case for ZANU and a liberated Zimbabwe. And we would do this for a few months, and then that person would be replaced because of some contradictions with him. I know one person, Thompson Maweri, whom we worked closely with for a number of years, who also was replaced. And part of what that meant is that in some instances there was a broken relationships because from time to time because of these disruptions based on contradictions they had to contend with. And many, when we say contradictions, part of what you have to really recognize is the capacity for the intelligence apparatus of the Rhodesian government working very close with the CIA and other forces like that to cause problems inside the organization. And so sometimes things would be disrupted based on that. And then, of course, the greater problem for us was, and we had a similar problem with the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania, is at the juncture where the negotiated settlement occurred at Lancaster, and the deals were made off the battlefield that resulted in the peace. With white people still controlling the land, and at some juncture, England having promised to purchase the land from the white people, at the moment that this peace thing occurred, then all relationships, we lost all contact with ZANU, just as we did with PAC. Mm. And so it was one of the serious contradictions we've had with Pan-Africanists. It seems Pan-Africanism was real at the juncture they needed to mobilize international African support to affect independence in a particular land area, that Pan-Africanism sort of dissipated once they could go to power. Mm. And so the relationships didn't exist anymore. In fact, we haven't had a formal communication with ZANU since that time. Hmm. And ZANU was one of the organizations that we talked to, along with the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania, about building the African Socialist International. And I believe that, and there were other issues that we've had with the PAC and with ZANU, with whom we were extraordinarily close. And I should mention to you, when I say we had relationships with both PAC and with ZANU, I mean that these relationships were relationships that we developed even as most of the white liberals and most of the so-called revolutionary African organizations were either hedging their bets by being for both ZANU and ZAPU, PAC and ANC. We said it was very clear to us that we had to take a line based on principle, and because of their relationship to the land question and their articulation of an all-African solution, that we had to be, our support went solely to ZANU and solely to the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania. And this wasn't some charity relationship, but we've been convinced for a long time that Africa will not know freedom, not know genuine freedom, unless we build an all-African process that we see the African Socialist International being representative of.
Hmm. Now, Chairman, one of the things I've heard you say is that we support Mugabe against the imperialists, and we support the people of Zimbabwe against Mugabe. What is meant by that statement?
Well, first of all, what we want to clarify is this, that the entire crisis And what we see now in Zimbabwe is imposed on Zimbabwe by the imperialists.
Yes.
Who have determined to bring down the ZANU-PF government. Mm-hmm. And the symbol of that government, of course, is Robert Mugabe, who is the head of ZANU, who's president of Zimbabwe, and whose crime is, as far as they are concerned, the fact that he is in front of a movement to take back the land that was forcibly extracted from African people. And that statement is an understatement of what the whites did in Zimbabwe.
Yes.
Where Cecil Rhodes, for example, on one afternoon, who introduced Maxim machine guns to that area in the process of stealing the land, in one afternoon killed something like 5,000 Africans in what they call Zimbabwe, and took and brought British mercenaries whom were given thousands of acres of land each for their participation in killing our people there to take the land.
Yes.
So if Robert Mugabe, who is 83 now, I think, should live as long as the mythological Methuselah, he could not be worse in any way at yes. all than what imperial white power has done to us.
Yes.
And I am not, by the way, equating Mugabe with the imperialists, but I am responding, I guess, to the oft-articulated issue about the demon Mugabe. Mugabe is the demon. He took the land and they're misusing the land. And now that the Africans have the land, then we can't use it like the white people were the only ones who could make profits with the land.
Mm-hmm.
When actually Mugabe's crime is that he represents an incredibly significant symbol, one of the most powerful, if not the most popular leader in all of Africa, because he has been involved in this stand around the land question, which continues to resonate with Africans throughout the world, including in what they refer to as South Africa, Kenya, Namibia. All of these are issues where, when addressed appropriately, will create an even deeper crisis for imperial white power, because the African masses want that land back. And if they take that land, if they expropriate the land for our own use, of course, deprives the imperialists of that. So we support Mugabe, Zimbabwe, ZANU in this struggle against the imperialists, who want to set an example for him. They attack Mugabe, they attack ZANU, they say, see Negroes, this is what happens when the Africans take the land back. And then they are telling all the other Africans in the world
yes.
that if you should ever have the audacity to take this land back, or to try to take this land, this is what we will do to you. And in Zimbabwe, they've created a phony opposition in the form of the Movement for Democratic Change, the MDC. It is a phony opposition. It is an opposition that is a handmaiden of imperial white power, of the settlers who have been able to enjoy the benefit of the land at the expense of African people there directly, and of imperialists who from around the world. In fact, every attack that's being made against Mugabe and ZANU at this juncture is something that is tied up with what they like to refer to as regime change.
Yes.
The rights of white people and white power to determine which Africans are legitimate Africans, are going to be the ones who should be representative of our people. So we have struggles even with some young Africans who otherwise have a progressive rhetoric in England, who challenge Africans who are associated with the African Union and other African countries, who have demonstrations saying that there's something wrong with them, with the AU, because it does not attack Mugabe, etc. Because the reality is that all the efforts to get rid of Mugabe is designed to put MDC, which is a whore, in bed with imperialism in power.
Yes.
And so I'm saying that the masses and we would be worse off with the MDC and this and whatever replacement that the imperialists have to put in power.
Yes.
That what has to happen in Zimbabwe, and this is the contradiction, our contradiction with ZANU, and this is one that we've said even when we were close, as just as we articulated essentially the same contradiction with the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania, is that while ZANU and the PAC at that time in history were able to articulate the nationalist aspirations of our people, the aspirations to have our land, to have our freedom, and our aspirations to destroy borders which separate and define us, while they were capable at that juncture of saying that, they were incapable of dealing with the question of social transformation. What social class is capable of taking us all the way?
Yes.
And history has shown us over and over again that the African petty bourgeoisie cannot do that. The African middle class cannot do that. And if you say that the only thing that has to happen in Zimbabwe is that we have to create a situation where ZANU and Comrade Mugabe can be in power in peace, in that which would more or less give us the same kind of situation in Zimbabwe that exists all over Africa, then of course you accept the concept of imperial or capitalist domination over African people. And what we are saying is that the power has to be to the African working class, in a line with the poor peasantry who, in every instance, including Zimbabwe, were the backbone for the armed struggle that resulted in ZANU coming to power. So the question for us, you know, we say that that the slogan has to be something like power to the working class and land to the peasants, to the peasantry, and in Zimbabwe. And which clarifies, we believe, the question, because there is a class component to the struggle in Zimbabwe as it is throughout the rest of the world. So we oppose every imperialist effort to destabilize, undermine the government and the ruling party and Comrade Robert Mugabe on the one hand. But we're saying that we have to go further than that in Zimbabwe. It is not going to be good enough for simply ZANU to be in power and Comrade Robert Mugabe in power. The power has to go to the African working class and align with the poor peasantry there. So that is the movement that has to be constructed and built in Zimbabwe,
yes,
as it must be built around the world. And that is part of what the African Socialist International is about. It is about raising up the African working class and poor peasantry to their proper height as rulers of Africa and of Zimbabwe. So we say death to the imperialists, death to all of the efforts that are attempting to undermine and destroy this government and the interests of imperialism, and all power to the African workers and land to the poor peasantry.
Ooh. All right. Well, I want to take a break here, Chairman.
Could we also, while we do that, can we just put again, you know, if the comrade brother from Zipaya, either Kwanisaya Mafa or any other official representative of the organization, can you tell them again in the event that they are listening, because we're having problems getting through by phone to them,
yes.
And I don't know why we're having the problems, because you talked to one brother this morning and then couldn't talk to him again for some reason, that somebody's doing something with the phones. But if they're listening, perhaps they could call and participate in this discussion.
Yes, and they can do so by calling 001-727-824-5707. Again, that's country code 001-727-824-5707. 7. So we're going to take a brief break here. And folks who want to participate in this discussion, you can also call the same number, or you can email us by emailing at dj@uhururadio.com. We'll be back momentarily with more on the situation in Zimbabwe here on Africa Live.
Just living this life as a rebel. How is it possible that people just die every day in a land so rich? What about them? What about them? Where you at?
My people is wild, we take it to the streets.
Where you at?
Organizing, man, this crisis is deep.
Where you at?
But we ain't seen you in a couple of weeks. Don't let them have y'all stand to speak, raise up and fight to get free.
Where you at?
In the streets, to them gutters and alleys.
Now where you at?
The bus stops, barbershops, and the traps.
But where you at?
At the rally, listening to Chairman O'Malley. From Guinea Corn to Greed to Cali, scream like powers, how you find? I used to be young and foolish, didn't know what to do with my life. But inside was a clue, the situation was ruined. If life was a game, then Africans, we had to be losing. That's when I went to school and came in contact with the movement. That's when I finally found out that I was an African. Wasn't no magic boats back when the practice started to travel again. From back then up until right now, it was always fighting. Don't even think that we're settling down. No civil rights, man, get it right, man. Every Africa is our lifeline. So now we're organizing, win this thing in our lifetime. It's fight time, ding. Around the world, people's just bucking. And if you think that you won't pray it away, then good luck, cause you won't need it. In fact, you weed it a bit too much. These crackers giving out nothing but beatings, and dude, that sucks. But while you duck and tell you what you need to look at them facts, ain't a people that got us some freedom without fighting back.
So where you at?
My people's wild and take them to the streets.
Where you at?
Organizing, man, this crisis is deep.
Where you at?
But we ain't seen you in a couple of weeks. Don't let them have y'all stand to speak, raise up and fight to get free.
Where you at?
In the streets, to the gutters and alleys.
Now where you at?
The bus stops, barbershops, and the traps.
But where you at?
At the rally, listening to Chairman O'Malley. From Candy Corn to Green to Cali, scream like powers, how you find?
You can find me in Southeast D.C., 5 minutes away from where George Bush and them stayed, where they equipped young Africans with AKs and CRACK to commit violence horizontally. But ironically, we bust back to philosophy. Now we looking for enemies, finding new use for Hennessy. Molotov ring a bell to me. Going to my seats, we getting free. Getting cheese, not a concern to me. Crackers hurting me. Trigonometry. Matter of fact, they scared of me. Cause I'm down for the people. What's bad for the people? If you're down with the beast, look down for your people. Black. Who is it? A true movement with a new vision. No who isn't bullshit. If we fool, grip and smooth niggas, pull triggers for you snitches. Triggers for you, my comrades from here to Sierra Leone. I say these raps, play these tracks, spray these gats. That's where we at, where we at.
Where we at, comrades?
It's like comrades.
See you crown.
That's where we at, man.
It's like that.
How is it possible that people just die every day in a land so rich? What about them? There's no way logical with resources starting from the cold and aluminum and diamonds. What about them?
What about them?
If we each touch one, we can all touch all of the knives and forward this cause. Tell me where you at.
Got to come together.
Tell me where you at, huh?
Where you at?
From St. P to L.A., Brooklyn to J.A., D.C. to Hayday, all the way to
tell me where you at, huh? Where you at?
It's time to get it done now. We gotta make this revolution.
Where y'all at?
Where y'all at?
Where y'all at?
5 million in the Congo. 200,000 in Sierra Leone. A million more in Rwanda.
I'm tired of it. Our people can't keep
what
getting
about
this, man.
There's no way logical with resources starting from the coast and aluminum and diamonds. What about them?
Africa is rich. We shouldn't have to be poor.
What about them?
We don't gotta beg nobody for nothing. Let's take our resources back.
If we each touch one, we can all touch all of the knives and full of this cost. Tell me where you at.
This ain't a game out here. Our people are dying.
Tell me where you at.
We can't wait.
Huh?
How long are we supposed to wait until we gonna be free?
Can't be
scared, man. man. We got to fight. Our comrades in Paris, London, Jamaica, Haiti. You know what I'm saying? We gotta make this happen.
Seven Miss Swill. P Productions, CeeLo, Solo, Swell, ASI, when we say East Willay 2,
come on, everybody,
East Africa,
Zania,
we are indeed saying Tanzania, Africa is our land, Cameroon, that's real, Senegal,
East Willay 2,
Congo,
East Africa, Niger,
that's right.
Uhuru, and welcome back to Africa Live on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we have with us in the studio Chairman Omalia Shetela, Chairman of the African People's Socialist Party. And we've been talking about the struggle in Zimbabwe, the current situation in Zimbabwe, and the attempt by the imperialists to isolate Zimbabwe. I want to let folks know that you can participate in this discussion by calling country code 001-727-824-5707, or you can email us by emailing at dj@uhururadio.com. Now, Chairman, you were talking about you were talking about some of the issues with Pan-Africanists who we've had relationships with.
Yeah, I think though it might be helpful for listeners to know that we are struggling now for being directly in touch with comrades in Zimbabwe. We're in indirect communication now. Someone is trying to facilitate our ability to make this happen. Folk from South Africa and in Zimbabwe itself are struggling now to help us contact the comrade who this interview is supposed to involve. But yeah, I just wanted to say that it just seems to me that it's extremely important that we as African people who are involved in the struggle to free our homeland and free our people, that we have to come up with analyses of contradictions and problems and things that kept us from being as successful as we needed to be, and that prevent us from success now. And I was mentioning that, you know, even as we had this relationship with PAC and ZANU, we have resurrected the relationship with Pan-Africanist Congress over the last 3 years or more, which is an extraordinarily good thing for us. And I think we're in the process of redeveloping relationship with comrades in Zimbabwe. I think we will see all of our forces involved in developing the African Socialist International, which is a worldwide revolutionary party of African people that has as its strategic objective the liberation and unification of Africa and all African people. But there are some things that, as I mentioned, we had struggles with in our relationships. And one of these things is the issue of real internationalism that is not just for the purpose of putting a single force in government. I think that what we are looking at now in many ways in Zimbabwe is the inability of ZANU at that juncture to participate in helping us to forge the African Socialist International. And even since ZANU was in power, what work is there that it has done to forge an all-African consensus, program, process that, and what a wonderful place, position to be in, to have power, state power, and that you could use to advance the entire African revolution, but our ability to accept power and one of these borders defined by imperialism sets us up and keeps us isolated. And we had a responsibility and have one and have always had a responsibility to build an all-African capacity and to see and should have been able to see the struggle for Zimbabwe as one front of the overall African revolution that that was organically tied together and organizationally tied together. And the ability of the imperialists to isolate Zimbabwe and have imposed incredibly difficult conditions on our people there. I mean, thousands of Africans in Zimbabwe are dying daily because of this economic quarantine and how the imperialist powers internationally have come together to strangle this government, to impose its will there in Zimbabwe. But there is no equal response coming from revolutionary African forces around the world in defense of Zimbabwe and the defense of the Zimbabwean revolution as a part of the entire African revolution.
Yes.
And part of the problem is because as long as we hang on to this notion of a free country in these post-colonial border territories, then we don't see a stake in the liberation of one of these territories as something that benefits us all, except in some kind of indirect, abstract way. And what we're saying is that from the beginning, right now, we have to have an African Socialist International that can say that we're fighting for all Africa, every single inch of it.
Yes.
And whether, and if I live in Zimbabwe and I see that the crisis of imperialism gives us a greater opportunity in Sierra Leone, then I'm a part of a process that will help to throw all of our resources, all of our weight, all of our capacity to Sierra Leone, so that Sierra Leone becomes one of the nails in the coffin of imperialism that will emancipate all of African people. So that was one issue. The other, and it still is an issue, because right now we have this logic that's out there within the African world that somehow this imperialism that is absolutely united in terms of its intent to continue to dominate Africa, that somehow this imperialism is going to allow us to be able to become free in one post-colonial territory after the other.
Yes.
When the fact is imperialism controls the entire economy of all of Africa, and part of it, and it's precisely because we don't have a single Africa without these borders. The other thing is, what kind of organization are we going to have? What kind of organization will it take to do this? And I'm saying that you can't even get to that question unless you deal with the issue of class, because as difficult as it has been for Africans to deal with the issue of class, it is real. And it is something that has been imposed on us by imperialism, stratified society, where imperialists have imposed economic relationships on Africa and African people that has resulted in sectors, small sectors of our population, being able to have an existence that is separate and independent from the rest of us, and this sector relies more on a relationship with some form of imperialism and capitalism than it does with the rest of our people. The class question is a fundamental question, and some of us are coming to understand that. Nkrumah began to understand it after he was overthrown. But he built an organization in the Convention People's Party that did not understand the question. So even his party was in power when he was overturned, the vast majority of them, people in that party, went over to the imperialist side and did not offer any kind of resistance, and was not capable of offering resistance because of that ideological inadequacy, among other things. So the question of party, and then when we talk about party, the reason we have to talk about the class question is because in the final analysis, when we talk about party, we do it as opposed to fronts and unions and congresses and conventions and all these other characterizations that we've had, which mask the fact that a particular class force is struggling for power. And even if you call it a front or union or a congress, etc., the fact is that some social force is leading that. In most instances, when we have these kinds of organizations, it is the African petty bourgeoisie, which is a tiny sector of the African population and cannot go to power on its own, and must necessarily bring in the strength of the African workers and peasantry to take itself to power. What we're saying is that when we talk about parties, we're talking about a party of the African working class, conscious of its role and its historical mission to liberate Africa and African people, and therefore capable of engaging in the kind of social transformation that changes things on the ground. So it's not simply quote-unquote independence, but it's independence under the leadership of African workers aligned with the poor peasantry, which must have as its objective the actual transformation of the society. And so these are really fundamental kinds of issues and struggles that we've made at some juncture or another in our relationship both with ZANU and with PAC. When I say we made these struggles, I don't mean that we were making these struggles inside the national exec committees or et cetera, but with the forces that we work with and had an opportunity to discuss these things with. These are the kinds of things that we were promoting, and I believe that that hurt PAC, because PAC, for example, went into this negotiated situation by itself alone. while ANC had all the imperial forces of the entire world supporting it, and there was no way in hell that PAC could have gone to power. And then on those circumstances, relying only on what you have yourself, you find yourself isolated and then trying to come to power by being better ANC than the ANC has been by et cetera, as opposed to reaching, being having at your hand, fingertips the power and influence of the entire African world, just as they have the influence of the entire white world. And I think that ZANU would have been a much better place if it could have maintained that. And I'm not sure where it is, you know, there around this issues of class. And I do know that that anybody who's legitimately talking about the emancipation of African people has to have as a centerpiece in this program the eradication of those artificial borders that separate us from our resources and separate us from each other. And the question of class is fundamental. I read some years ago an interview that was done by Comrade Mugabe, who said at one juncture they were ideologically committed to socialism, but they had abandoned that. So I don't know where they stand on this question of the social force, the class force that's necessary to push the revolutionary process forward. Having said that, I speak as someone who anticipate a possibility of maintaining a relationship, or certainly redeveloping a relationship with comrades, to struggle around some of these critical questions. I don't say it as someone who is all-knowing and all-seeing. I believe that in the final analysis, the test is in the practice. And I do believe, however, that we've seen enough practice, not only in places like Zimbabwe and South Africa, but throughout the African world and other places, to help us to come to some kinds of conclusions about how our struggle has to be made.
I've heard the question raised. This is maybe kind of an aside. I've heard the question raised that how can we talk about the working class leading when in like throughout Africa you have a situation where you have peasantry, a peasant type of situation set up throughout most of Africa?
Yeah, that's a really important question. And there are two things about that. One is the question is asked by somebody who sees Africa from the vantage point of the specific borders, and is incapable of seeing an African working class, including, for example, we can be talking about Angola. They say, well, where's the African working class? Well, we say the African working class is in Zimbabwe, it is in South Africa, it is in Brazil, it is in Detroit in the United States. It is an international working class, and we an African internationalist worldview would help us be able to see this working class as an asset to the African revolution, not bound by borders, etc. So that's one response, and I think it's a quite legitimate response, and I think we limit it when we can't. It's the only reason we can't say that and see that is because we see our future tied up into these borders as defined by the imperialists. So that's one thing. But the other thing is, even if we were talking about a working class, for example, in a place where you have a majority peasantry population, and we had to rely on transformation there as the only solution, the fact is that you cannot base a theory and analysis on what exists now. You have to base your struggle on how you understand social development. And the fact is that if Africa is going to move forward in the world, it is going to move forward because of its capacity to develop the forces and production, to develop its capacity to produce.
Yeah.
And this, even though there might be a majority peasantry right now, the future absolutely requires the emergence of a strong working class in order for us to be able to develop Africa. So you don't base your movement and your practice on the circumstances existing now, you have to have some kind of theory that's informed by science that anticipates the future, that recognizes that if we are going to have an Africa that is going to be free, that is going to be self-reliant, that is going to be able to use the tremendous resources available to it, certainly or that ought to be available to it, then it means that the African working class is going to be have to be unfettered, unleashed, and capable of standing up to full stature.
Okay. And you know, one other question, Chairman, is this a silence among these so-called African leaders throughout Africa. Why are these guys not saying anything?
It's pathetic. You know, there was a committee, some meeting that happened with this thing that they call the African Union, where they were under tremendous pressure from the imperialists to condemn Mugabe. And they patted themselves on the back because they didn't condemn Mugabe. What they came out of that with was a statement that Mugabe, I think is Mbeki, was to facilitate a meeting with Mugabe or ZANU and the MDC. And that that somehow to win some kind of compromise through that process, and so this was like some compromise position that they came up with, and it was an absolute stance of cowardice, because they need to be able to say that we know what the imperialists are doing and what the MDC represents in the real world. When they talk about meet with the MDC, it's not like they're talking about meeting with two contending revolutionary forces, or even a contending democratic force on the ground who might recognize some legitimate contradictions. They're talking about actually meeting with the indirect representative of imperialism. They're talking about doing that. And the only thing that would satisfy them is the destruction of that government and the eradication of the program that demands that the land be returned to the African masses. So it is a cowardly stance that is to be expected. And this is part of what Nkrumah talked about when he talked about those borders and the fact that there has to be a united Africa.
Yes.
But the problem is that they can't build a united Africa. They can talk AU all they want to. They can talk about trying to build an African Union. They cannot do it. And the reason they cannot do it is because the imperialist controls the economy of every one of them. And there are even few so-called post-colonial governments that don't even actually, that don't have either grants given to them by white power to run their own government. And sometimes, as in Sierra Leone, white folk who are actually in control of their budgets and other aspects of their government. So you have a situation where the vast majority of trade, formal trade, as they call it, it's not even trade, it's extortion, that occurs within Africa or by Africa, is where resources are leaving Africa, going to other places, and only 3-7% of the so-called trade happens among Africans ourselves. Somebody else controls our economy, and they control that. They can do that because we don't have a united Africa, and we can't have a united Africa with these neocolonial leaders. And I use the term neocolonial not as a not as some kind of slander, etc., but as I'm defining a relationship. And the fact is that that each of these entities requires, for its continuing existence as it exists, the borders within which they exist. That's the thing that keeps this little tiny ruling elite in power. That's the thing that allows them to get their Mercedes Benz and all the other trappings that go with what appears to be power. And that's the context within which each of these social force of the middle class or petty bourgeoisie reproduces itself within that. So it is like committing a form of social suicide for them to call for an all Africa to actually work for United Africa.
Yes.
Which is why, and some of them were pretty articulate in stating that when they were opposed to Nkrumah when he was trying to develop the United States of Africa, because they, as it is now, they can be the prime minister, they can be the president, they can, you know, take trips to Disneyland and do the other kinds of things that too many of the African leaders find useful. So that's why the genuine struggle to emancipate Africa and to eradicate the borders is going to have to come from below. That's why the African Socialist International is going to have to be an organization of African revolutionaries based in the African working class and poor peasantry. That's why it's not going to be some vote that happens in the AU that's going to bring about a genuinely united Africa. It is going to be a vote that comes out of the African Socialist International Congress that says, all power to the African workers and poor peasants. That's the thing that's going to make determination.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now I've seen these articulations that are putting forward Gaddafi now is, you know, in a certain kind of way is the new Nkrumah. Which was interesting to me, saying, you know, he's calling for a united Africa and whatnot, and so he's the new Nkrumah now. What's your view on that?
Well, you know, I've seen those statements by Gaddafi, and he has been the most militant and persistent. His has been the most militant, persistent articulation of a united Africa, and I think that he's doing the best he can do. But Gaddafi stands at a terrible disadvantage, in part because the society in Libya is not fundamentally different from other places, except they got more oil money that they can use to perhaps bring some kinds of things to Libyan society that's not being done in some other places. I guess you might characterize it as a bit more progressive in that fashion. But even in Libya, you don't have the workers in power. You don't have the working class in power. You have a setup there that where there are so many resources that that certain kinds of contradictions can be masked. And the fact is that the workers are the ones who produce all the value. It's not all value in all societies is created by workers and who put their hands to nature and engage in what is characterized as production. That's where it comes from. And so you have a situation in Libya where you have a ruling elite that can be characterized as progressive, where a lot of oil, you know, is been made available and they're able to dole it out and dealing with certain kinds of social services. And we say, right on, that's okay, but that's not the same thing as the workers in power. And that Nkrumah came to understand this question of class even late. You know, I mean, some people consider one of his most important works to have been Class Struggle in Africa, something that he wrote after he was overthrown, because he did not understand that question clearly when he was in power. So raising the issue of Gaddafi, I think, is important because it brings to mind another critical issue that's being raised today at this critical time of where Africa certainly is being targeted by all the imperialist forces, not you know, just the traditional European and U.S. imperialist forces, because we see the U.S., you see that England, you know, has its Africa plan, and we see that France, you know, talks about its Africa plan, and the U.S., you know, certainly does and has had for a while, and even had Wolfowitz over the World Bank, who characterized his main target was going to be Africa. They are scrambling for Africa. in part to resuscitate a dying, crippled imperialism. But even China, you know, has which has the I think the world's fastest growing economy, is moving and certainly is the busiest, most aggressive external economic force that's operating in Africa today. And while people may prefer "quote unquote" China to all the others, because China doesn't have the colonial legacy in Africa, the problem for us is not resolved by a beneficent, if one could even consider that, and I'm saying it's not beneficent, but by a beneficent imperial force. That the future of Africa is going to have to be determined by African people ourselves. We are going to have to take our Africa, and we are going to have to develop Africa and its resources for a free and united Africa and African people. And I think that is that's the fundamental contradiction that we're looking at. The thing, though, is that we keep noticing constantly on the horizon for a discussion and attempt to shape and define what the discussion is going to be in Africa. Of course, the Zimbabwe question is an attempt to do that. But one of the other outstanding issues is the question of Darfur and the Arabs and in Africa. And we see all kinds of efforts being made to saying that you can't talk about a united Africa, you can't talk about the United States of Africa, because there are Arabs in the north, and the Arabs don't like us, and they have a legacy of slavery and et cetera, and they do. The fact is that the trans-Saharan slave trade lasted for 1,500 years as compared to 500 years in the U.S., and slavery was brutal, extraordinarily brutal under the Arabs, just as it was under the Europeans. But that's not the issue. The issue, and I think that there is going to have to be resolution to the contradictions that exist between Africans and Arabs. But the fundamental contradiction is the emergence of imperial white power, capitalism, imperial, which is dominates the world economy. There is a world economy, and the Arab economic life functions within an imperialist world economy that is controlled by Europe and North America, and essentially by North America, at this time and place in history. That capitalism is a world economy, and the Arab's economic life occurs within that context, and right now, it too is under serious aggression for a number of reasons, for a few reasons, by imperial white power. Yeah. That is fighting for its very life. And so I think that this notion that somehow our biggest contradiction now is the Arabs is a diversion. And people are dying in Darfur. And in the middle of that is a tremendous amount of confusion, just like it is in throughout the entire African world, where you have Africans killing Africans in Darfur, and some of the Africans who are killing Africans in what they call Darfur call themselves Arabs, and some of the Africans and the African victims call themselves often Africans, and if you look at Sudan as a whole, you see some similarities there, that people who we would characterize as Africans who call themselves Arabs, just like you got in this country, you know, people who are capable of committing crimes against African people in Africa and other places, and do so in Haiti, do so in throughout Africa. They're Negroes from America who have been in Rwanda and places like that in the employ of U.S. imperialism. Yes. Because they think they are Americans. And so we are capable, in the middle of this confusion, of committing all kinds of offenses against each other. The question continues to be the struggle for Africa and African liberation, and part of that involves the question of the struggle for African nationality and identity. Beyond that, this whole notion that somehow you can't call for a United States of Africa because there are some Arabs in the north. In fact, the vast majority of Arabs live in Africa. I'm not conceding a single inch of African territory to anybody. And I believe that when it is over, we will have discovered that all of us who are capable of fighting for the historical mission of assuming the historical mission for liberated United Africa and African people as our own in Africa are going to become Africans in the process of making the struggle for national liberation. And certainly all black people in the world are Africans, and all black people in Africa are Africans. But the question of nationality is not some static question that is there for all times, because at one juncture, most people who lived in Africa did not consider ourselves Africans, even though there were no borders. We didn't consider ourselves Africans, and we're having problems in Africa today. Locked in these borders because most people identify based on ethnicity, Fulani, yes. Fula, Kikuyu, and all these other things which is problematic for us. I'm saying that the fundamental contradiction that we have continues to be a contradiction with imperialism, which employs neocolonialism in Africa, and neocolonialism exists in Sudan. And neocolonialism exists in Mauritania, and neocolonialism exists throughout all of Africa, and the emancipation of our people, our Africa, is going to come in part in the struggle against imperialism that also recognizes the need to overthrow neocolonialism in order to get there.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I want to take a break here, Chairman, and again, just to let folks know out there, we are still working to get with the comrade who we intend to interview out of Zimbabwe, and we have forces working in Zimbabwe and in South Africa that extent. But we're gonna take a break here and come back with more here on Africa Live at AhuaRadio.com. welcome back to Africa Live on ahuraradio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe. We have in the studio with us Chairman Omali Yeshitela, Chairman of the African People's Socialist Party. And we now have on the line with us Comrade Sibusiso Klaba out of Azania, what is known by the colonial name South Africa. And Comrade Sibusiso is the president of PICO, the youth wing of the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania, which has been involved in the process of uniting youth, a youth league throughout the Southern Africa area. Uhuru, comrade.
Uhuru, uhuru, comrade. Binga.
Uhuru, Africa. Uhuru.
And uhuru to chairman.
It's good to have you on. We've been having some difficulties with getting on the comrades out of Zimbabwe, but it's good to be able to have you on with us. Could you let folks know about one? Could you let folks know about the work that you all are doing there in Southern Africa to unite these youth organizations throughout Southern Africa?
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Let me say that, as Chairman indicated, that upon the artificial independence of the nation states in Africa, most of our organization severe relationships with the organizations that they used to work on, both in terms of interaction and joint ideological development. And as young people in Southern Africa, we have realized that that's what has cost us our full independence and our quest for self-determination and our ideological strength to be able to continuously influence each other. Therefore, we took upon ourselves to ensure that we break these borders. We break these borders so that we work across borders. We don't get confined into the little Berlin conference borders that were imposed upon us, but we break them. We are currently working closely with comrades in Swaziland, with the NNC Youth League. We are working closely with comrades in Zimbabwe, in ZIPAI. We are working to consolidate with comrades in Lesotho and in Namibia. And as we develop this program, we hope that we will get other comrades on board in Southern Africa so that we can speak as one from this region while we build across the continent to, in conjunction with the work of the ASI.
Yes. Right on, comrade. That's exciting. Just listening to the work that's happening there. Now, in Zimbabwe specifically, can you say from your perspective what it is that we're looking at there?
Let me first say that there's a myth that we're all given by the imperialist media that Zimbabwe is collapsing, infrastructure is broken down. There is nothing that works there. Luckily, we had a meeting there in February upon the work that we are doing, just to make sure that we don't get stories. Because, of course, we are not. We sometimes find that you get influenced by this media. But I can tell you that we were surprised that there were a lot of buildings that were going up in Zimbabwe. We were impressed that Zimbabwe, since 2000, has built 7 new universities. Actually, it had only 2 universities. Now it has 9 universities, almost a university in every state. Hmm. We're surprised to see the amount of construction that was going on. The roads, from what you hear from the imperialists, you'll think that the roads are all crumbling by now. We found very nice tarred road that we're traveling in. And to put the picture clearly, Zimbabwe is not looking any worse than Azania here, or any country that is relatively developed. Of course, with us not being total power in terms of economy, you'll find that our people are still not at the level which we'll want them to be in terms of the life standard. But I can tell you that the life standard in Zimbabwe, for example, it's much better than a typical Zimbabwean had a better lifestyle than a typical Azanian. I think the media will portray it differently. The standard is higher that side. It's just that they are used to better standard than they have. That's why they will cry more when things fall a bit due to the squeeze that the imperialists has put Zimbabwe under.
That's interesting. From hearing what we hear all the time in imperialist media, you think that everything's on fire, and nothing is working. That's a completely different picture.
I can say, Dinga, that I seriously challenge listeners of this program to get out to Zimbabwe and see that what is being portrayed is actually surprising. It's shocking compared to what the reality.
Yeah,
it's a very subjective feeling that you see on the media. It's a picture that is being created that actually does not exist in that manner. There are other problems that Zimbabweans and as Africans everywhere they have to confront with. But it's not that everything is burning in Zimbabwe.
But that's part of the a campaign for regime change, to give this sense that the people have to be rescued from ourselves, from this deteriorating situation, from the tyrant of Mugabe and the economic chaos and crises that have come about as a consequence of him being in place. That's what's to legitimize the so-called regime change. That's what it is to have someone like Morgan Tsvangirai, for example, to break the law in public and then have the police deal with him publicly, and then to shoot these images all around the world to say what a tyrant he is, to justify any kind of intervention that the imperialists might want to do.
I mean, if you are listening to the news from London, where an archbishop of the Catholic Church decided to say that Britain must attack Zimbabwe, you just see what kind of a mindset these people have who are calling for regime change within Zimbabwe. These people who portray a situation that in Zimbabwe there's no grocery, there's nothing on the shops. But when you get to Zimbabwe, you find people busy in the shops. You find from the taxi rank, you see big markets of green veggies. And you wonder where is this great starvation that is being talked about. Although we know that African people in every neighborhood, in every country, there are families who are suffering greatly that we must rescue. But it's not the picture that is being given, that it is a general phenomenon.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of impact is the sanctions from U.S. and Britain and whatnot having on the economy there in Zimbabwe?
There are two things. I think that as African revolutionaries, we have a challenge to inspire our comrades in Zimbabwe. The mistake that they are making, they are also crying and crying foul. To me, standing where I am, I see opportunities. I see the pulling out of European companies giving us an opportunity to set up workers' cooperatives that can produce what has been taken out. Because there is great sabotage, particularly within the manufacturing sector in Zimbabwe, to prove that there is a need for regime change. They are producing below capacity. They are basically dismantling machinery and taking them to other countries. So the opportunity that presents the African Revolution is to put an alternative economic system in Zimbabwe in terms of proper cooperatives that are run by workers and owned by workers themselves.
Splendid.
That's very good, comrade.
Splendid. Yeah, I think that's right.
But when you talk to comrades in Zimbabwe, they see a gloom. They see that sanctions have taken away IMF for us. who are outside, we see an opportunity that once you are free of IMF, because Zimbabwe is one country that they've already paid the debt on IMF.
Yeah.
And they paid the World Bank.
Yeah.
So they are one free country in terms of that particular system, if they can only realize that. Unfortunately, the leadership does not realize that at the current moment.
But that's a general contradiction that we have as Africans, the recognizing the need to break with imperialism, to break these economic structures that really function to bind us, as opposed to bring any kind of relief or development for us. That, and I agree, I think that's a splendid observation that in Zimbabwe, revolutionaries have an opportunity, along with African revolutionaries worldwide, have an opportunity to take advantage of the fact that the imperialists have disengaged, even though the disengagement is designed to punish us, but it gives us an opportunity to go ahead and develop some economic capacity of our own, independent of the imperialists.
Now, comrade, can you, comrade Tsibusiso, can you let folks know about? I understand that there are some projects that the comrades are involved in there on the ground in Zimbabwe, around like farming and whatnot. Can you let folks know about these projects?
Basically, let me start here before I go to specific projects. Firstly, the myth that is put out there is that the agriculture in Zimbabwe has collapsed because the almighty geniuses are no longer farming. African people can never farm. Whereas in all these areas, going to Azania, to Kenya, to Namibia, the people who actually touch the soil is us.
Yes.
And the settlers, the white settlers, just enjoy the fruits of our labor. Currently in Zimbabwe, the Zimbabwean government has run two projects. One is to, because when the whites left the farms, they broke implements and left with implements. So the Zimbabwean government currently is putting a lot of money into buying equipment to replace those equipments in farms. Secondly, is the agricultural extension officers. You know that in most countries there is an agricultural council or agricultural institution that does research to assist farmers. Zimbabwe has gone further to put farm advisors on the ground who go to, one, to assist the farmers who are working. Secondly, to assess farmers that are not underutilized for them to be registered with other farmers who need the farm. Thirdly, to check farmers. Because the policy is that the one family, one farm, to check if there are no families that under any corrupt practices have got a second farm, and they deal with those three things. And also to add that why the imperialists are crying is that 80% of the land that has been acquired from settlers actually has been given to the youth strategically to make sure that even if we're not able to produce to the maximum in the next 5 years, but the life expectancy of young people is such that we'll be able to utilize those farms as the experience accrue. With that 80%, then to go to specific farm projects, Comrade Mafa, who should have been on the show, currently is leading a youth cooperative that has about 100 acres of land that they are using to farm. Currently, they are farming grain, but their ambition is to farm vegetables as well, particularly in the organic manner to increase the health of our people. Yeah. As you know, that we normally eat junk, highly poisoned food that is grown in methods that are not necessarily healthy for us. So that's a project that we are intently involved with as well, being interested in the success of that, being a prototype for many other youth cooperatives that have registered farms, because this culture of private ownership has to be broken, and we must increase the worker ownership, the collective ownership mentality in every enterprise that we enter into.
Yes.
Now, is this project that's led by our comrade Mafa, is it initiated on land that is reclaimed from the settlers?
Yes, it's a land that was given by the settlers. Actually, it's registered under the youth ministry in Zimbabwe as the farms that are given to the youth. As I indicated, that 80% of the land has been given to the youth. So those are the farms that were taken away from the settlers that are being utilized by young people and by Africans in Zimbabwe.
You know, we, Mafrika, we're working to try and win participation by other Africans in that project. And you know, comrade Sister Aisha Fields, who heads up the African All African People's Development and Empowerment Project, and she is in touch with comrade Mafa in Zimbabwe. We're trying to find a way. I know it's not as it's not happening as quickly as they would like for it to happen in Zimbabwe, but we're really trying to explore some way to have a kind of intervention. But we want to do it, you know, not as some kind of charity project where we just raise and send money, but something that can actually, even as it forwards the situation in Zimbabwe, can help us to take similar programs to other places, and so that I think one of the things that she's communicating with them about is our being able to actually have some forces to come and work on the ground with them, so that we learn as well and have the ability to take the program to other places. Of course, there is an issue of resource development that I know that's being talked about as well. But the point I wanted to make is that we are truly attempting to contribute to an all-African intervention in that project.
I think just to add, as the chairman is indicating, basically in Southern Africa, we are greatly interested in the success of those projects because we are looking at setting up Zimbabwe as our commissariat, or looking at setting Zimbabwe for doing a lot of political education, because there are a lot of lessons to be learned that they have gone through. There is no other organization of our ideological tradition that has actually governed a country.
Yes.
And we've learned both mistakes and successes of Zimbabwe, and we need to explore that.
Yes.
So as already highlighted, the major problem of the project now is to get water, easily accessible water in terms of a borehole or alternative system of irrigation, to ensure that we move beyond the just once a year planting which grain gives us, to further do multi planting and multi cultivation throughout the year, and keep the farm and utilize the farm to the fullest.
Yeah.
And I must indicate that for those who believe that white farmers were doing a good job, actually that's the kind of farming they used to do. They believe that you plant once a year, you sleep all year, because they used to sleep on our energies and our resources and use it for themselves. So planting once a year, it's enough for an individual who's using many people, almost do not pay them.
Yeah.
But it's not enough to sustain the life of young people who are part of the corporate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hmm. Do you have the ability to say anything just around how people can participate in helping that project that the comrades are initiating there, how they can participate in it?
I think there are a couple of options that people have. One, I think the best way is to get through the All Africa Empowerment Project and fully be involved, because as the chairman already indicated, that through that project we are looking at assisting the whole of Southern Africa. That project will just be one of them. Secondly, is the issue of ensuring that there is a question of grain that we normally have a problem in Zimbabwe. The question of seed, I mean, that we normally have a problem with, because normally the seed, that part of the problem why Zimbabwe did not have a high yield in the past few years is that they were sabotaged by some companies that brought a seed that is actually rotten, that cannot grow. So it's both material and technical and special support. As much as people in Zimbabwe, as I indicated, the agricultural department of the government in Zimbabwe do a great support in terms of the various projects, but you find that the agricultural extension officers are quite stretched. So it can be useful. Any agricultural expertise can be useful, and managerial expertise can be useful in training workers in that particular farm. But not only in that particular farm, throughout the region. That's why I will recommend that people get in touch with Dr. Fields, who leads this project, and participate both monetarily and make themselves volunteer in terms of their skills,
splendid,
which we can use greatly on the continent.
Splendid, splendid, splendid.
All right, and I want to. We talked a bit about the ideological warfare that imperialism is waging against our people in Zimbabwe. But there, it's not just that. It's also, you know, some work that imperialism is doing on the ground there to attempt to destabilize things through the MDC. Can you say something about the MDC and the role that it plays there in Zimbabwe?
MDC is...
The Movement for Democratic Change.
I think the MDC has said it more time. It campaigns for sanctions. It campaigns for isolation of Zimbabwe. You just see the level of unpatriotism, and they believe that the continent can be saved by Britain.
Mm.
They are generally funded by the white left from Europe and Northern America.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
They are not only destabilizing Zimbabwe, but they go all around the continent, in every conference around the world, destabilizing our focus, on focusing on the real enemy of our people, which is imperialism and capitalism,
mm-hmm.
and focus on minor issues that can be resolved at home. As much as people think that ZANU-PF is very brutal, it is not correct, I will tell you. There are more than six parties that have been active in Zimbabwean politics, and none of them have been beaten up by police. All of them hold meetings and political rallies. But the style and the method of MDC, particularly the faction that is led by Tswang Rai, its plan has been to provoke the state machinery. Of course, the state machinery, you must remember, not politicians. They cannot calculate these things. When you bring force, they fight with the force back. Harare alone, there were more than three trains that were banned, a number of police vehicles banned. Even now, there are policemen who are still in hospital, resulting on the scuffles between the MDC led by Tswang Rai during the time where Tswang Rai was shown as a victim.
Yeah.
So those people who are shown as victims are not really victims. They start this conflict with the knowledge that when they get beaten up, it becomes real public news, and it does quite disservice to the African Revolution.
That clears a lot of the picture up, I think. What we've been seeing there. Now, I just wanted to, again, can you, hold on one second.
I'm interested in the youth, the regional work that's happening, and the Gweru summit and its outcome. And also, I just want to say, Mafrika, that we are extremely impressed with how PAC seems to be moving and developing and reclaiming itself. That's just an aside. But can you talk at all about the Gweru Summit and what kinds of determinations have come out of that and how you see that moving?
I think that there were some important resolutions that were taken in Gweru. We always had worked bilaterally with youth structures in Southern Africa, but we have never worked as a collective. As you know, there's a difference between adding two than the exponential muscles that you bring together.
Yes.
So that's a resolution that we are going to be an institution. That is one institution in Southern Africa.
And that comprises, at this juncture, what organizations are involved in this process?
The organizations that are involved is the Ngwane National Liberatory Congress in Swaziland, NLC Youth League, and ZIPAI in Zimbabwe. And we are working on more than a dozen of organizations that have not fully committed, so
right.
I will not
right.
put their names, particularly in Namibia, Lesotho,
right.
and Botswana.
Right.
So we're hoping that we will, by the end of August, we will have comrades from those particular countries that are have a constituency behind them, and they have a proven record of working on the needs of our people on the global scale, not just on the narrow
right.
perspective of regionalism or tribalism. But our intention is to move beyond. But already there's work that is being done by other comrades from everywhere else, including the ISI work. Secondly, Southern Africa has always approached the issue of reparations from the debt cancellation perspective. And from that meeting, we took that we'll move from a correct platform of reparation, because reparation basically has been driven by the white left. And as Africanists, we will be taking that particular program head on. But also the issue of undermining borders, in terms of the electoral system, that we've committed youth organizations that when there are elections in Zimbabwe, we will move all of us to go and learn how they run elections in Zimbabwe in support of ZANU-PF. And when there are elections in Azania, they will come and assist the PAC. And when there are elections in Swaziland, we'll assist the NNC in full force.
Splendid.
So we are basically ensuring that we are not confined in these small cups that they are putting us into, and we end up having a big storm, but it's in the cup.
Easily.
We want the storm to really hit the world, not the cup.
Yes. Yes.
Splendid. Right. Splendid.
And I must say that the work, our relationship with the African People's Socialist Party has assisted us a lot as the youth organizations in Southern Africa. Particularly, as I indicated, that we will be forming a serious part of the All Africa's Empowerment Project. And we are looking at ensuring that we increase our participation in the voice of the African International Revolution, the Workers' International Revolution, in terms of propagating and get Africans to know what's really happening. Because the imperialists give a good picture and a bad picture wherever they like any stooge that they like. When they stop liking that stooge, they give a bad picture and create havoc in the life of thousands of our people.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yes. Well, we're running out of time, comrades. This is this has been a great show that we've had today. We have only a few minutes left, about 7 minutes left. I would like to ask Comrade Sibusiso if there's anything that you would like to say in closing about, you know, Zimbabwe, about the work being done throughout Southern Africa. Is there anything in closing that you would like to say?
I would like to say that Southern Africa, there is going to be a great change in this part of the continent. I challenge other workers, African workers across the world, to initiate these revolutions across their part of the world. Because on this part of the world, number one thing that we are doing as young people, we are reclaiming our party. The youth of ZANU-PF is ensuring that it reclaims its own party and ensure that the working class is in charge of that party. We have done the same in the PAC, and we are doing the same in Swaziland, and we want to complete that project in this continent. And we are continuously inspired by seeing young people in West Africa in terms of the Africanist movement who are doing such an excellent job in engaging the imperialists there. And also in the U.S., we see young people like Binga and many other young people who are engaging the imperialists head-on, using every avenue, being culture, agriculture, mining, whatever skill we have, we must engage imperialism. We do not even, it's us or them. They either destroy us or we destroy them. As young people in Southern Africa, we are determined to ensure that African people's revolution prevail, not only in Southern Africa, but across the world. That's why we seriously believe in the success of the African Socialist International as an institution that will cater and show that we are well coordinated across the African world. Thank you.
Israel too.
Yeah, Africa.
We appreciate so much your being on the air. You're making yourself available to be here with us on today, Comrade Sibusiso. So your contribution has been great, and the contribution of the comrades there in Azania in Southern Africa is a great one to forwarding this this struggle for our Africa, for our liberation as African people. So I just wanted to just express that appreciation again for you being here with us, being on the air with us today, and for the work that you're doing on the ground. Chairman, is there anything you want to say before we go?
I think Mafrika has said it. I mean, I really appreciate his contributions and the work that's being done there. I've seen the work firsthand. Also, I just wanted to say that we're busy on this end, Mafrika, to try and make it possible for you to get Uhuru Radio on your cell phone there. We're trying to do it in time for, by the time of the election, we should have perfected it so that we can even participate in the election there. By allowing people to listen to Uhuru Radio on their cell phones. So that's something we're busily working on right now. And I want to thank you so much for being there, and I look forward to seeing you again soon. So thank you, Mafrika.
Uhuru.
Uhuru.
Uhuru. Well, that concludes today's broadcast of Africa Live, but it's not the end for uhururadio.com. You can listen throughout the day, and we've got coming up right after this Uhuru on the Move with Comrade President Chimurenga Waller, the President of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement. So stay tuned for more great programming here on uhururadio.com.
We're moving right out of Babylon, and we're going to our father's land. Yeah, how good and how pleasant it would be before God.
said already. Let it be done. Yeah. We are the children of the Rastaman. We are the children of the Maya man. Africa, unite. Cause the children. Grooving to our father's land. Yeah. How good and how pleasant it would be before God and man to see the unification of all Rasta man. Yeah. As it's been said already, let it be done.
I'm your host, Chimurenga Waller, with my co-host, Kobina Bantushango, who is coming from Huntsville, Alabama. He is also going to be my guest today because he has become the expert of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement on the case of the Liberty City 7. This has made national news again in the last couple of days. If you have somehow missed this story for the last year, the Liberty City 7 is seven African men who were arrested on June 22nd of 2006 and charged with a number of different terrorism-related charges, including sedition, claiming that the U.S. government claiming that they were trying to overthrow the government. This happened with the introduction of Arab informants into a group of young men functioning as essentially a church and a religious group. And Kobina Bantushango has been the one in Miami actively organizing around the case of the Liberty City 7 and has helped to bring together the defense committee in the city of Miami. Kobina, are you there?
Uhuru,
Kobina, good to have you here as a guest, more so than a